So if you embody those things, you're bringing the good stuff, you treat your person that way, they're going to feel it because they're going to pick up on your energy. So that's number one.
You are listening to The Alzheimer's Podcast with Mike Good of Togetherness, your number one resource for practical tips and insights, empowering you and your family to live well with Alzheimer's. Hello, I'm Mike Good of Togetherness. Welcome to episode 37 of The Alzheimer's Podcast, where my goal is always to empower you to maintain a positive experience, reduce and eliminate the need for medications, and make your time together with those you care for the best it can be. Today we have another episode of Navigating Rough Terrain with the Dementia Sherpa, Christy Turner, the Dementia Sherpa, and I will continue our six-part series on knowing the signs of when it's time to intervene or get professional help. As I think we would all agree, safety is our number one priority when we're caring for another person, but we have to do this while still protecting their independence and dignity. This is a very difficult balancing act, and knowing when to take action while staying liked is very challenging. In this episode, Christy will be sharing strategies to help you know when it's time to take action due to diminished safety awareness and impaired judgment. Christy Turner is a certified dementia practitioner, certified dementia care unit manager, and cognitive stimulation instructor. She has run award-winning memory care communities in assisted living and skilled nursing levels of care. Using her 16 years of experience and working with over 1,100 people living with dementia and their families, she's developed a system that helps families move from crisis management to confidence. Hello, Christy. Welcome back for another episode of Navigating Rough Terrain with the Dementia Sherpa.
Hi, thanks for having me back.
In our last episode, Christy, you shared five main areas with associated signs to help our listeners know when it's time to intervene or get professional help. The first category or area on that list is diminished safety awareness and impaired judgment. Is it first by chance or is there a reason?
I don't think it was any particular reason. I think for me, my orientation is always, people think, of course, memory loss and dementia, and I am always thinking safety first, because we just always need people to be safe. Then we can help them, but we can't do that if they're not safe first.
So, Christy, would you like to just go ahead and share with us what you mean by safety, diminished safety awareness and impaired judgment in this situation?
Sure. So when I'm working with private clients, I like to ask two questions. Well, I ask more than two questions, but related to safety, because I just think they're so illuminating. So one is I'll ask folks, if you really didn't feel good, if you felt like you were having a heart attack, what would you do? And the answers are sometimes just really amazing. And this is one of those questions that's really helpful for families that are trying to determine, should my person still be living independently? Are they okay to be home alone while I'm at work or, that type of thing? And I just remember this really sweet lady, I asked her that question and she said, I'd wait for my daughter to come. And I said, well, you mean like you'd call her and have her come? And she said, oh no, she comes every Tuesday afternoon.
Oh no.
I was like, okay, well, that's going to be pretty bad if it happened on Tuesday night, right? So the answer, of course, that we're looking for is call 911. And it's not just the correct answer that we're looking for, but also how long does it take somebody to come up with the correct answer? Because, when I'm talking to people, these are literally the last two questions I ask. So at that point, they have experienced this as a pleasant social visit. And just to give listeners an idea, so far, knock on wood, I have a 100% rate of people saying to me at the end of a visit, oh, thanks so much for coming by, honey. Come back anytime. So that's how not stressed people are when I'm assessing them. So if they're really relaxed and feeling like life is good and comfortable, and they can't come up with call 911 as the right answer for what would you do if you thought you were having a heart attack, imagine what kind of answer they're going to come up with if they really do feel like they're having a heart attack, if they're feeling stressed, if they're in pain. Right? And none of us make great decisions when we're really feeling stressed or feeling in pain, but there are some things that we do need to have ingrained in us in order to keep us safe. And that would be one of them. So that's why I asked that question. The other question I like to ask is, what would you do if there was a fire in your house? And the correct answer, of course, there is get out. And a lot of times we think, call 911. No, get out, then call 911. And so I've had people tell me, well, you know, I guess I'd look for a towel so I could put it out, or, you know, that type of thing. So that's why I think safety is a big deal.
Yeah, I think I would have told you, well, it depends on the size, and I'll probably try to grab my fire extinguisher.
Well, you're just still a puppy, so I'd probably accept that answer from you. I would believe you that you could, you know, grab a fire extinguisher if it was in the kitchen and, you know, put out a little fire on the stove. But I do not like that answer for people who use walkers,
right,
or who I have seen, okay, it's going to take them a little bit to get out of this chair, right? So that's another thing that a lot of times we don't think about is how quickly can somebody move out of the house and how much assistance do they need in order to do that.
And what just went through my mind, I'm thinking, where is my fire extinguisher? So I had to process that whole thought, and that took me a second.
Yeah. And again, you know, there's nothing going on, right?
Right.
There's not a fire right now.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
And I think for our listeners, though, we want to talk about, you know, being prepared. I think there's like, I always tell people there's preparation in case something happens. There's prevention to try to avoid it if it does happen. And then there's how you're going to respond if it does happen. So I always try to talk about those three things. So safety helps people stay independent in their homes, because you were talking about people who are still living at home.
Mm-hmm.
And we really, while we want to keep them safe, we want to be careful not to restrict their independence and their individualism, right? So that's a fine line.
Yeah, so safety should never be confused with imprisonment, right?
Exactly.
Those are two totally different things. So, you know, I think that we can support people being safely independent by looking at things like, you know, judgment, right? Because that's what that comes down to on those two questions, is their judgment intact enough to be able to be independently safe at home. But just things like deadbolt on the door, that can cue someone that they need to ask who's at the door first, right? Of course, they would need to remember to use it. So that's something else. But there are also, you know, in-home care agencies that can come in and do chores like dishes, laundry, help, you know, somebody with writing out their checks so that they can sign them and get them into the envelope, putting the stamp on them and that kind of stuff. So there are different ways to support people in order to stay safely at home. Now, that doesn't sound like a big deal for somebody from an in-home care agency to come do, but think about if somebody just had, let's say, 4 hours of support a week, just because they needed laundry done and maybe some meals cooked so that they could microwave them. But those types of tasks kind of took a lot out of them physically. That could be the difference between somebody needing to move into assisted living and being able to stay at home independently. And we're only talking about 4 hours a week, right? So there, I think if we just kind of look at it, like, once we've determined that somebody is safe to be at home, how can we support them in staying there and being independent? Like, if we just say, well, this is where this person lives, now how do we make it work? Then that's different than, should we move, should we not, you know, and kind of opening that can of worms.
I was just contacted yesterday by somebody that was telling me that more and more people, in my opinion, are trying to find technology that can be the intervention and avoid having that caregiver or company come in. And I feel like that's a huge risk, because if a person can't remember to take their medications on a daily basis, and this person's concerned that an alarm going off, a reminder alarm, they won't know what that reminder alarm is, at that tells me that it might be time for to get help. Do you agree?
I absolutely agree. I think technology can give us a false sense of security.
Right.
So just that was a great example that you gave. I'm thinking of when I was a memory care director, for example. So every room or apartment has what are called call lights, right? And so that's so somebody can request assistance when they need it. And some places also will give residents a necklace to wear that has a button on it, so they can just push the button no matter where they are. Well, for a lot of memory care communities here in Oregon, we can get a waiver on that so that we don't have call lights in rooms. And the reason why is because that just becomes a trip hazard, or possibly some type of hazard, because people don't know what it's for, right? They're just not oriented to, because who among us has a call light system in their home?
Right.
Nobody. We just don't have that. And that's the same thing with those pendants is, we go, okay, well, great. If something happens, they can just call for assistance. Do you know what? Lifeline, which is like, I think the largest provider of those pendants, now has a pendant that actually has a motion sensor on it, so that help comes when it detects that somebody has fallen.
Right.
Why did they have to develop that? Because people would fall and not use the button, because either, you know, in some cases they might be unconscious, but also because they just weren't oriented to the fact that they needed to push a button. So I do think technology can be dangerous in that sense of giving us a false sense of security.
Right.
For sure.
And that's a great technology, that elevation, change in elevation detection. I was happy to see that when they came out with that. But one thing you're kind of touching on is that by being able to get a waiver for the call lights, you're able to change the environment rather than trying to change the individual. And I think a lot of our listeners and our care partners at home try to change their loved one rather than making changes to the home itself.
Mm-hmm.
Like removing trip hazards, like changing paint colors, like, it's these many different things you can do to make the home safer.
Right. I think you have a guide for that, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
That has a lot of great tips in that. You know, I just always come back to this. If we were able to change the person, then we wouldn't be talking about dementia.
True.
Because when somebody has dementia, their brain is under attack. If they could change, I promise you they would. No question in my mind. They would absolutely change. They would do whatever it takes. But because of the nature of the process and what's happening in their brain, they're not able to do that. So we can, you know, kind of should all over ourselves, right? They should be able to do this. They should, and it's not going to matter. So all that does is just frustrate us. It's just much more effective and much less frustrating to make the changes ourselves into the environment or to our approach and get a better outcome.
True. I believe on your website, Christy, you have an article specifically on dementia safety awareness and impaired judgment that ties to your list. And I'll put a link to that in the show notes for our listeners. Now, but there are several items on that list. Can you talk to us about a couple or two or three of those items?
You mean signs of diminished safety awareness?
Exactly.
Yeah, absolutely. So one is that it's called wandering, which is actually recognized now as more of a pejorative term. And the reason is because people who are living with dementia typically are not wandering. And wandering just seems like, oh, it's pretty aimless, right? But usually they've got someplace in mind that they think they need to be. And so they're not going to dawdle necessarily, but so just kind of take wandering aimlessness as, you know, the popular vernacular.
Right. I need to move about for some reason.
Exactly.
Maybe I just want to go for a walk and get some fresh air.
Right, exactly. But if you don't know where they're going and they get disoriented or confused about where they are, that can be a problem.
Exactly.
Letting strangers into the home. This is a story I tell all the time where I had a client who lived in a rural area. She opened the door for a man she'd never seen before who was there to sell her a side of beef for the bargain price of $1,200. She cut that check and her granddaughter came the next day to help her pay bills, and which she'd been doing for a couple of months, discovered what happened, went and looked in the freezer. She had about $300 worth of ground beef.
Oh, no.
Which, okay, you know, $300 of ground beef, that's nice, but that's not $1,200 in a side of beef, right?
Right.
So letting strangers in the home, you know, that's not good. Unsafe driving, and I think the article you're referencing actually does have a link to that quiz, so you can figure out if that's a situation that you need to look at in your family.
In that quiz you mentioned, you actually mentioned in our last episode, but that was a quiz to help care partners know if it's time to help their loved one stop driving?
Right.
Okay.
Exactly. And then, so another sign of diminished safety awareness or impaired judgment is leaving a burner on unattended, leaving pots or pans on the stove unattended. Where, you know, and we've all walked away from something and forgotten about it, but I'm talking about like it's catching on fire. I actually had a client who loved to cook, and she had copper bottom cookware. Mm. I did not know this, but I did after this experience. That liquefies.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I had no idea. Not only did it liquefy, but then it scared her. When it started happening, she took the handle and jerked it.
Oh, no.
And yeah, and it burned a hole in the vinyl on the kitchen floor.
Oh, God.
Yeah. And like the glorious outcome to this story is she was not injured.
Oh,
thank God.
She must have had a mitten on or must have had a good safety handle.
Yeah, it did. And the, you know, nothing hit her foot.
Right.
Right. And, but again, she was so frightened, she just flung it into the sink. So, you know, nobody was hurt, but there was a hole in the floor that was really scary. And blessedly, it was not a gas stove. So she just, you know, turned off the burner and called her boyfriend.
Okay.
But, you know, obviously that could have had a bad outcome. And from that point on, she never used the stove again.
You hear a lot of families wanting to put shutoff valves and stuff on their stoves. And it's actually not an easy thing to accomplish, unfortunately, but you can contact your gas company and see if they can assist you. I know that.
You can do that. You can also get knob covers that are safety knob covers that make it very difficult for somebody to turn on the knobs.
Right.
Or you can just pull the knobs off altogether. We've talked about this before, addition before subtraction. So like in my client's case, she loved to cook. She was passionate about it. So we looked at no bake recipes. We looked at what could be safely done in the microwave. What could you make with fresh ingredients that didn't require any cooking? And so she continued to cook, just not with the stove or the oven. And it was very satisfying for her. She loved expressing herself in that way and was able to continue doing that for a couple of years.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
That's a great idea.
And then finally, just like as we talked about at the top of the show, being able to, you just want people to definitely be able to quickly and correctly answer what to do if there was a fire or if they felt like they were having a heart attack. So those are the common things that you want to look for.
Right. And so as we intervene, and you used the term prison earlier, and I always tell people you want to avoid this all or nothing approach to care where, just like you just said, actually, addition before subtraction, rather than taking all the cooking away from mom, we adapt and we make it safer so that her or dad, if he's the cook, can continue doing what they love to do. So,
right.
So important because, so Christy, thanks for sharing, you know, the signs and stuff to help our listeners know when it's time to intervene, but how do they stay popular, as you put it, with their, with their loved one when they're doing this intervention?
So actually, I think three ways that make it fairly simple. And remember, simple doesn't necessarily mean easy, but it is simple. So number one, just embody the good stuff, right? And so that's what the good stuff is, what I call bringing respect, kindness, love, empathy, and compassion. Right. So if you embody those things, you're bringing the good stuff, you treat your person that way, they're going to feel it, right? Because they're going to pick up on your energy. So that's number one. Number two, you know, like we always say, we professionals always say, throw the doctor under the bus. So put that target on somebody else's back. You don't need to be the bad guy, right? So that's really important. And then I said three things and now I just lost the third thing. Okay, so focus on those two things for sure.
It'll come to
How
you.
How to stay popular. Oh, yes, this is very important. Have a plan. So have a plan before you intervene, right? That does not mean you need to be a genius. It doesn't mean you have to have everything all figured out. You want to essentially just have a sketch of your plan. So for example, if your parent is not safe to drive anymore, you've done the driving quiz, you've determined they're not safe to drive anymore, now you need a plan. So one thing would be addition before subtraction, right? So if they need transportation, what alternate arrangements can you make for that so that there are other things that they can do other than drive? And then embody the good stuff and definitely throw the doctor under the bus and leave it to DMV to break the bad news, right? So that's kind of executing your little plan right there. And of course, other professionals are always available to you too. So you can reach out for professional help as well, beyond a doctor, somebody like me, somebody like Mike, where they can kind of guide you through the process. But having a plan, just kind of beginning with the end in mind, right? Like, this is the goal I'm trying to get to. And let me just sketch out real quick how I'm going to do it. Just because it gives you, I think, a little sense of security, at least a little sense of security, like, okay, I am actually going to get through this. I may be tempted to hyperventilate because it's really uncomfortable, but I know I have a plan. And so I can just, you know, do A, B, C, and I'm going to be okay at the end of it.
That's wonderful. Just a reminder to our listeners that today in this episode, we did cover the first of five areas that we talked about in the last episode where you can observe and learn to understand when it's time to intervene or get help. And in the next four episodes, we'll cover the next four areas. So,
perfect.
So, Christy, thanks again for joining us here on the Alzheimer's Podcast. And thank you to our listeners.
My pleasure. Thank you.
This concludes our conversation with Christy Turner, the Dementia Sherpa, right here on the Alzheimer's Podcast. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss an episode, and I would love to hear from you. You might be surprised by how little feedback I get from listeners, so just know that any positive feedback helps me continue this podcast. Thank you, and bye-bye. You've been listening to The Alzheimer's Podcast with Mike Good of Togetherness. For more information and to get the resources mentioned in this episode, visit togetherness.com/podcast.